Welcome to Georgia Focus. I'm John Clark on the Georgia News Network. The Top 10 Issues to Watch is an annual publication of the Georgia Partnership for Excellence in Education. The list of issues for 2021 was released on Friday, and here to talk about these issues for this year are Dr. Dana Rickman, she is Vice President of the Partnership, and Robert Gaines, who is Director of Communications. Well, guys, it's here we are again, and Dana, I was just telling you a minute ago, this is our ninth year of having you guys on, and Robert, this is your first year, so welcome aboard to our annual get-together. So good to have both of you on the show today.
Well, it's great to be here. I can't believe we've done this so many times.
I know.
It's fantastic.
It's a tradition. It's a tradition. So, Robert, talk about this, the list of that you come up with every year and what the purpose of this is. Who is it targeted to?
Well, we target a lot of leaders across the state, many of whom are either serving in the legislature or are leading local communities with mayors, city council persons, educators. We have a pretty broad stakeholder group, and the idea is to put our finger on the top issues we think will be a focus for the coming year. So it comes out top of the year, and we spend the latter half of the previous year working with a lot of our partners, narrowing down the list to the 10 that we end up with, and just asking those who are really in the education landscape, what's going to be on the agenda next year? What are the pressing issues? And then we try to capture all that in the report.
And Dana, how do you determine the top 10 issues that you need to focus on each year?
Well, we have a pretty, I guess, robust process that we go through. And, you know, as Robert mentioned, that it includes all of our friends and partners and everybody who sort of touches education, from other advocates and policy wonks like ourselves, but also leaders of education agencies, government stakeholders. We've reached out to our friends in rural communities and local community leaders, but also folks outside of education where, you know, education would still impact them, like, you know, healthcare and housing. And we really just sort of talk through what are you seeing, hearing, hoping for, afraid of, and sort of go through a process and try. Usually there's more than 10 issues, but we try to combine them and whittle them down to a manageable amount.
Yeah. Let's go through the list, guys, and see what we have for this year. Issue number one is called Equity, the Imperative for Recovery to Success.
Essentially, I think we all realize 2020 was a tough year.
Yeah.
And one of the things we saw happen was that a lot of the inequities that were already plaguing Georgia's public schools were exposed in a way that hadn't been exposed before. And so we weren't able to simply turn away and pretend like there was no problem. And so as we were having conversations around moving from response to recovery and then success, we really wanted to focus on the fact that we can't afford to go back to normal. The pre-pandemic Georgia, as it relates to education, was not a place we wanted to return to. And so moving forward, we want to make a commitment to create. So as we wrote the rest of the topics, we tied them all together through a lens of equity. And what does it mean when you can provide all students what they need according to where they are and the supports they actually need to be successful across the birth to work pipeline?
Yeah, I think, you know, historically, our first issues that we did, you know, all of these 10 issues, why education issues tend to be, you know, related to each other, they were 10 discrete issues. And last year was the first year that we really tried to tie them together with an overall theme. And last year's issue was, you know, what do we need to be doing to get ready for 2030 in terms of having a strong education pipeline, workforce development, that sort of thing. And so the theme this year is very similar. With the results of the pandemic and the economic collapse that came with it, all of the issues that we had last year, we still have,
yeah,
but they're even more intense. Like they're harder to solve. The urgency is higher, and so, you know, we're looking across now all of these 10 issues with, as Robert mentioned, this lens of equity and this lens of what are the really systemic barriers and structures that have been in place in Georgia that have kept people from participating fully in the education system, in the economic development system. And now, you know, don't let a good crisis go to waste. Now's the time to sort of dismantle all of that and put it back together so that Georgia can thrive and be better than we were before all of this happened. And so you'll see that theme coming back again and again and again throughout all 10 issues.
And then the second one, certainly I know all these usually dovetail into each other, but and this one is probably going to be really important, and that's funding. Certainly in this time, as we keep saying, but it's funding which is the essential for achieving equity. What is the plan there?
Yeah, and you know, the issues, again, they don't change wildly from year to year, so it seems like we're always talking about funding.
Yeah.
But again, this year it seems especially urgent, where we have a couple of challenges in funding for education for us this year. One is that schools are facing a dramatic increase in costs just to operate in this environment, you know, related to operating a school and trying to make up for lost learning time. So they're addressing things like the digital divide, they have to transport fewer students, you know, the PPEs, the cleaning, the health supplies, smaller classrooms, you know, and expanded services to meeting social, emotional, and the mental health needs of their students and staff. So all of these are really high extra costs that the schools are having to absorb right now. But that dovetails with the economic crisis that we're facing, where schools are facing the current budget was reduced, state budget was reduced by about 10%. For the money that the districts are getting. So they have sort of this double whammy of an exponential increased cost to serve students and increased need, but significantly fewer resources to do so. And so that sort of leads us to, you know, what do we do about that? And we really need to think about long-term a comprehensive funding plan that really prioritizes an equitable distribution and access to resources that meet the needs of our students and educators in this sort of hopefully very soon post-COVID world. So thinking about like weighted student funding formulas, we need a cost study. What are the actual costs associated with what we've asked of our schools? Things like that.
And then the third issue, we're always talking about early learning and how important it is, but it's early learning, the foundation for an inclusive economic recovery. That seems timely, too.
It does. You know, I think one of the biggest lessons that came out loud and clear over the past, you know, 9 months to a year was how critical the availability of childcare is. For not only the students, the young children, but the adults who have to go to work every day. Mm-hmm. And how that system, and that the crack in that system of how access to high quality early learning is just not available, especially to low income and marginalized populations. And so we saw significant cracks in that pipeline. And so sort of broadly speaking, we really need to look at access to high quality, but also what are the supports for the early learning workforce, the teachers that are in and, you know, taking care of our youngest citizens, you know, alignment between early learning and K-12, and again, back to funding, what a funding structure for infants through preschool, pre-K, after school, and how do we fund the early learning workforce as well? And so all of these issues are related into sort of creating that structure that allows access to high-quality care and allows sort of our economic engine to keep going. So the parents can work and all these sorts of things.
The fourth one is, these are very timely, given our times right now. The fourth one is especially because we've had to learn how to do school differently this year, and that is delivery of instruction, new approaches to learning, which we have had so quite a bit this year, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So when COVID first hit and schools closed, everyone moved to remote learning, which on the surface sounded like a great idea, but for a lot of districts who were not prepared for that, they ran into a lot of trouble, and some students went weeks, if not months, without any type of instructional experience. And so thinking ahead to the fall of 2020 and then beyond, the question was, well, if something like this were to happen again, how would we educate all students? And on top of that, what if, just generally speaking, we need to be thinking about alternative ways of instructing students, because not everyone perhaps learns best in a traditional in-class experience. So this idea of prioritizing the expansion of instructional models was something that really came to the forefront. When you have students who may be low-income, special education, English language learners, there may be ways for us to engage them and improve their outcomes that we have not considered before. And so, of course, that requires resources. When you're offering virtual learning, hybrid learning, learning hubs, all of which are some models that are kind of bubbling up as possibilities that will serve students beyond our current context, it does take resources. And so thinking about what the state would have to do to provide those resources to districts to ensure that there's money to create robust virtual learning options, but then also preparing teachers to be able to teach in a virtual environment, and all of the different moving parts that come along with saying, okay, we're going to offer traditional in-school learning, but we're also going to expand that so that students who may need a different experience can have access to that as well.
The fifth issue talks about teachers. Teachers have had an up and down year this year, and that's something you're going to talk about on the fifth issue is teachers' professionalism, pay, and preparation. How do the teachers take a look at that moving forward?
Well, I'd say as it relates to the previous issue around delivery of instruction, a big part of that, being able to do that successfully, is having teachers who are present and qualified to deploy some of those alternative models. And so part of what needs to happen is pulling teachers into that conversation around instructional delivery. A lot of times we get ahead of the teachers on the policies we want to pass, but having them a part of that conversation is really, really important. So if you're going to rethink instructional delivery and educational models, you have to do it in collaboration with teachers, and you also have to be sure you have high-quality teachers who can really bring to life those new models so that students are really getting the best out of what we're proposing.
Yeah, I would add that, too, for the teachers. I mean, you're right that God bless the teachers. They have just sort of supported all of us through this over the past year. And there's concern that the teaching profession is going to take a big hit. We've already had, teacher shortages in certain areas and certain subjects. And the pressure that we've now put on teachers to be all things to all students has just, worried that fewer and fewer people are going to go into the field. And so thinking about how do we treat them as true professionals, incorporate them into these conversations about retooling, relearning, making sure they have what they need, making sure they feel supported and not just told, go do this, trust us, it's going to work out. I think teachers right now feel very sort of isolated and alone in trying to figure this out. And so we need to really up the professional respect and the preparation and sort of support them as well as they have been supporting, our students and in our communities.
Today we are discussing the top 10 education issues to watch for 2021. This is an annual publication of the Georgia Partnership for Excellence in Education, and we're discussing that with Drs. Dana Rickman and Robert Gaines from the Georgia Partnership for Excellence in Education. We'll move on to number six, accountability and assessments, the opportunity to rethink and get it right.
Well, we've been having debates about accountability assessments for years. Right now, the conversations and the trends that we've been having are just, fewer tests, pushback against accountability, fewer tests. And I think the debate about the number of tests is really the wrong question. I think as a state, what we need to be asking is, what do we want to do with assessments? How can they be a tool to help us improve instructional delivery and improve schools? And so right now in particular, we absolutely need a coordinated sort of statewide assessment plan to, one, gauge where our students are. We had such a disruption in learning over the past year. We need to understand the disparate impact the pandemic had on different students, considering who had access and who didn't. And then, you know, as we mentioned before, there's a ton of experimentation happening right now with different instructional models. And so we need good assessments and data about those instructional models to know which ones are really working with which populations and, you know, of the state and types of students, and be able to compare results statewide. So that's critical. And I think this is a time, too, to really think differently about accountability, sort of reclaim that word that, you know, I agree that punitive high-stakes accountability is not the way to go, but a good accountability system can really help a school or a district identify where they're doing well and where they need to target resources to help shore up different things, especially in this time of limited resources. We need to be able to target them to the highest need area.
Right. And then, of course, we're always talking about one of the most important parts in education is the parents and their engagement. And that is issue number 7, parent engagement, positioning families as partners. Go into detail on that.
One of the interesting things that happened last year when students had to go home for school is parents became teachers oftentimes.
Yeah.
And a newfound respect for what teachers actually do every day, I think, was very prominent part of what the parents took away from that experience. And so when you recognize the amount of work the teachers do, the challenges they face, you realize they could use some support. So this conversation is really around how do you put parents in a place to really leverage their own resources to ensure their students are succeeding in the classroom and out of the classroom. So we understand that when parents are involved and they can advocate for their children and they understand what their children are doing in school, whether or not they're on pace, they can become partners in the success process. So integrating them into the learning process has a huge return on investment for Georgia economically and also academically, and really being sure that they're plugged into what's happening so that they can round out what teachers are doing in the classroom.
Issue number 8 is post-secondary completion, a pathway to prosperity. How about that one?
You know, absolutely. The pipeline sort of to and through post-secondary, and when we talk about post-secondary, we mean, you know, the technical community colleges or the four-year colleges, any kind of post-secondary degree or certificate. Like, that pipeline has long been known to have some very large cracks when it comes to serving especially students of color. Our last critical issue forum we did back in September really dug into this, and that we know that class and especially race play a significant role in determining the likelihood of access to and success in a post-secondary environment. Those determine your success much more so than aptitude. And so in August of 2020, our EdQuest Georgia Coalition published a series of policy recommendations to sort of address some of these issues, and we look into them in detail here in this issue of the top 10. And two of them I want to highlight, and both have to do with funding. The first one is really look at the post-secondary funding model. And so in this regard, I'm not necessarily talking about more funding, but how do we fund our post-secondary institutions to meet, you know, current demand? You know, for example, currently part of the funding formula for the University System of Georgia is based on square footage, which seems a little outdated when we talk about how much virtual learning and things like that. We really need to look at how we're funding the post-secondary institutions. On the flip side of that, and we've been saying this for a while, that the state really needs a statewide needs-based aid program. We're one of two states in the country that don't have one. There certainly are some need-based aid programs available in Georgia, but not a sort of a comprehensive statewide program. And if we really want to level the playing field, as it were, to get more people completing post-secondary, we need to get serious about that.
And, of course, education is vital to the workforce in Georgia. And issue number 9 talks about that, Georgia's workforce pipeline, creating equitable access and opportunities.
Absolutely. So one of the things Dana mentioned earlier is that the Southern Regional Education Board research that came out last year that we reported on in our 2020 edition of the top 10 said that by 2030, we were looking at 1.5 million people in Georgia who would be unemployable due to a mismatch in skills and workforce demand. Due to the pandemic, that timeline is now 2025. So there's an increased urgency to respond to what is a tremendous skills gap. And so Georgia's efforts to reskill, upskill, and provide professional development programs is very, very critical right now. And part of what's happening is that, particularly in, let's say, our CTAE program, which is Career Technical and Agricultural Education programs that provide credentials for students who are either going to enter the career track or going to college, those credentials don't always match what the workforce is demanding. And so what we're trying to advocate for is an alignment between the programs and the credentials they're offering and the regional demand, so that when people actually put time and effort into earning a credential, it translates into a legitimate career opportunity. So through the equity lens, when you have a lot of workers of color, women, immigrants, and those who may not always have easy access to improving their skill sets, that is something that needs to change. And so creating a more equitable pipeline of opportunity so that people who are subject to changes in the economy can actually upgrade their skills and weather future disruptions is something that Georgia should really invest in.
Right. And Dana, we're at the final, number 10 on the list, the final one for this year's list. And what is that one?
Issue 10, Reinventing Education in Georgia, a Call for Leadership and Collaboration. And this one, I think, is really important. I mean, these are all really important, but the things that we've been talking about here today, we're talking about, you know, redesigning teacher training and professional development models, addressing statewide broadband access, strengthening alignments between early learning and K-12, post-secondary, and local, regional, and state workforce pathways. We're also talking about whole system overhauls that can hopefully reverse impacts of poverty and discrimination. And really, we need to sort of coordinate education policy with economic development policy. These are really big, heavy lifts. And so we really need a statewide policy agenda that coordinates across all of these multiple systems. But at the same time, keeping in mind that Georgia is a state that really values local control, right? And so we need to figure out a way to balance a really ambitious sort of state-led plan about how to do this while honoring, you know, local control. And so, you know, the idea around reinventing education is really beyond any one system or local school district's ability to innovate. There are certainly continues to be a vital role for local control and decisions, particularly around coordinating through the schools and the community to identify local needs and set local priorities. For it to really flourish, it needs a strong sort of policy plan to help it, you know, address all of these issues.
Well, that's a look at the list for this year, for 2021. And I know this was released on Friday, and it's brand new to the public. So who has that in their hands now? And if people want to get it and review it, where can they go to find out?
If you want to grab a copy, you can go to our website, www.gpee.org. You can request a hard copy, but you are also free to download an electronic copy. We're more than willing to send out additional copies by request, and we can walk you through the process for doing that if you give us a call. But we're excited about it and looking forward to sharing it with the world.
Well, pleasure as always to talk with you guys, and you know, you're the Georgia Partnership for Excellence in Education, but I'm glad we have a partnership, and we have had it for now 9 years, with you guys coming on every January, and I wish you much success in this. I know education has been a little challenging this year, and a lot of good things to look for in 2021, so thank you both for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, and Happy New Year to you.
And today we have been discussing the top 10 education issues to watch in 2021. This is an annual publication from the Georgia Partnership for Excellence in Education. And talking with us today have been Dr. Dana Rickman. She is Vice President of the Partnership, and Dr. Robert Gaines. He is Director of Communications. And we thank them for coming on the show again with us this year. If you have questions or comments about today's program, you can always email me, John Clark at GeorgiaNewsNetwork.com. Thanks for listening. I will talk to you next week on Georgia Focus.